Then the third one is livelihood. Okay, perfect or right or, you know, brought to fruition, livelihood. So this has to deal with how we earn our living, how we sustain our life, and how we use our wealth. And this is a very important thing because a good deal of our life revolves around how we earn a living and how we use our wealth. And a lot of our conditioning that we go through, you know, because so much of our time is involved in this, then the job and career we choose is going to influence the circumstances we're going to in, which in turn influences our own conditioning. And you know, it conditions us back. And so really talking about livelihood and thinking deeply about it is quite important. Okay, so the basic thing is to try in the one's way of making a livelihood is to not break precepts, you know, the five precepts of killing, stealing, unwise sexual behavior, lying, and intoxicants, and also not to do anything which encourages other people to act in destructive ways. So those are the basic criteria. You know, to have a job yourself where you don't have to act unethically, and to have a job where you don't have to encourage anybody else to. Yeah? This is a real interesting thing. Yes, it was. And, prostitution was not, for example, included under unwise sexual conduct. Only if you took somebody else's, when somebody else had paid for the prostitute, if you took her instead. That was unwise sexual conduct. When Genlo River said that, I nearly hit the ceiling. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, obviously it was a completely different social ethic at that time. Okay. I mean, the whole notion towards women and all sorts of things was very different then than it was now. Also, it may not have been that prostitutes were sold into it in slavery or forced into it by economic conditions. So then there were some specific occupations that it's strongly recommended to not to get engaged in. For example, being a butcher, okay, being a fisher person, okay, catching fish, you know, selling weapons, being involved in the so-called defense industry, which is the offense industry, selling or distributing or serving alcohol or intoxicants. dealing in animal skins and furs, you know, because some beings were killed because of that. Soothsaying, okay, selling poisons. I remember one time I gave this talk and somebody, the person who drove me home, just recognized that, you know, what was it? I think either that they had a job in an insecticide company or they had just bought a whole bunch of insecticides. But they really decided to change after that. Okay, so, you know, any kind of poisons that would destroy life. Raising livestock for slaughter. Dealing in slaves. That also came from the time of the Buddha. Being a hunter or a soldier. So, anything that involves other beings dying or killing them. Also usury. But, of course, I think now working in a bank is quite an accepted social thing. Probably at the time of the Buddha, you know, people really cheated each other through usury. Operating a gambling casino. Okay. So any kind of operating a tavern, you know, or a bar, serving alcoholic beverages, anything like this that when I, you know, because I fly so much, especially Lufthansa Airlines, boy, they serve so much alcohol. And I kept thinking of, you know, all the flight attendants and the karma that they're creating that, you know, they don't realize what's going on. Some of them don't even know not to offer me alcohol. Some of them recognize and don't offer. Okay. So these kinds of, also, you know, in today's society, we would include in this prostitution, or any kind of thing involved in the pornography business. I think, you know, I mean, pornography is something that's probably pretty, I think that's pretty exploitative. So being involved in, yeah. Okay, so those kinds of livelihoods, or even if you yourself aren't involved in a livelihood, but somehow you do your job with the wrong intention, like let's say you're a doctor, but you really want there to be a lot of sickness so that you get more patients and more money. Okay, so then that becomes wrong livelihood. Or if you're a trader, you know, and you deal in business and you want there to be a war or an embargo or sanctions so that you can do more trading or more black market. Okay, so trading in itself and doing business is quite an okay livelihood. But when, again, you're praying for other people to have misfortune so that you can benefit from it, then it becomes the wrong livelihood.
So like short selling?
What's the short selling?
Stock trading? Or you bet on
the system? Stock market is beyond my realm of understanding. Yeah, I'll leave you guys to determine that. Okay. Yeah. But anything that kind of involves deceit or cheating. Yeah. Also, even if you do have a proper livelihood, you know, using deceit or cheating in it. And this is a question I commonly get asked, you know, it's like my boss expects me to lie or, you know, I do business, I'm expected to cheat the customer. And I have one friend who, she used to work in Hong Kong for Levi Strauss as one of the chief executives, and she's a Buddhist. And I asked her this question. I said, you know, how about this? You know, how to keep good ethics so when you're doing, you know, top-notch business like that. She said, actually, keeping good ethics is the way to have a good business. Because if you cheat the customers, if, you know, you shortchange them in some way, if you deceive them, they're not going to come back to you. Whereas if you're straightforward and you don't overcharge, they're going to come back. So she was actually saying that this whole question really is quite irrelevant, and that our feeling a need to cheat and deceive and lie in business is not actually a real need.
Somebody having some kind of an animal, watering animals.
Now there you and Buddha have different ideas. Yeah, on both those issues, I think. You know, in other words, killing one to feed the other. Yeah, still, from a Buddhist viewpoint, that would be unethical. The best thing is to try and get them something else to eat. Yeah. Also because, you know, it's been shown that production of meat, you know, to produce a certain amount of grain takes less resources, et cetera, than meat. So better to send that. Also, it won't spoil in the relief airplanes and so on. You know, in terms of doing abortion, also, I mean, this is a real difficult issue. When asked about it, His Holiness usually says it depends on the situation. But in general, you know, abortion is included within taking life. Yeah, this is very interesting because, you know, traditionally fortune telling, okay, soothsaying, this kind of thing, it's often seen as a way of cheating people or encouraging superstitious practice. But then you say, but the Tibetan lamas do divinations. And in the Chinese temples, they have these sticks, and you throw them, you pray to Kuan Yin, and you throw the sticks, and it tells your fortune. You know, I can give you the way they usually answer it, and then I can give you my opinion. Okay? The way, you know, the standard answer for that is that this is done in order to benefit people, okay? If you pray to Chenrezig and you throw sticks, if your mind has enough faith, maybe it can, you know, the slip of paper that turns out from the sticks you throw, maybe it helps you get some clarity in your mind. Or doing the divinations, they also invoke, you know, Pelden Lama or Tara or one of the Buddhas who then kind of speaks through the dice. So they say that it's done for the benefit of sentient beings. My own opinion is that there may be some practitioners for which, in which that is really the case and it's really done for the benefit of others and in which they really have some ability to give that kind of advice. There may be other practitioners where that's not the case. Yeah? And so I think one needs to be very, very careful. Also, I think it's quite easy. You know, they always say that, like, if you go to a fortune teller and the fortune teller says, oh, you know, something really awful is going to happen in your life, or you're going to, you know, have a really bad rebirth, you better do a lot of purification because there's some incredible negativity. If the fortune teller tells you, you get really scared, you go right out, you know, and learn a purification practice and start doing it. But if you come to Dharma class and from the scriptures, you hear that the Buddha says, you know, look at the karma you've created in your life and there's a lot of negativity and, you know, that brings suffering. Then we say, oh, Buddha's just talking. That isn't really the case. And it's really true, isn't it? You know, people often take much more serious what a channeler tells them or what a fortune teller tells them or what the I Ching tells them. They take that much more personally and serious than what the Buddha's teachings tell them. And I think this is because of our limited mental capacity that this happens. Yeah. So I think sometimes, you know, this kind of fortune telling is done as a way to communicate with people who have that tendency and will only listen in that way. Okay.
So an astrologer may have a right livelihood.
They may have right livelihood. I mean, there's a form of Buddhist astrology and so on. You know, there are certain Buddhists who practice it. Although His Holiness does, he says it's good to keep that tradition alive, but he himself doesn't rely a whole lot on it. I think it depends a lot on motivation, a lot on skill, a lot on how one emphasizes things. You know, like if one says, the Dharma teachings aren't so important, but look at your chart. Okay? And if when making a decision, you know, you have this really important decision to make, so instead of thinking about, you know, I mean, what are the criteria we use for a decision? Well, to make a wise decision, first of all, we should think about what is most ethical. You know, like look at the ethical pros and cons and look at the benefit for sentient beings and look at the benefit for our Dharma practice and use these kinds of criteria for making decisions. But instead of encouraging that, if an astrologer encourages you to use your chart, okay, forget about ethics, forget about altruism, forget about your Dharma practice, just use the chart to make your decisions. Or just use the I Ching or just use, you know, the dice, then I think we're getting really off balance. Really off balance. Okay, so I'm not negating any of those things because sometimes those things can be helpful, can be useful, but it's just when you trust those things more than you trust the Buddha's teachings, then there can be, you know, a lot of difficulty. Yeah. It would depend who you went to ask, too. Yeah, like if you're a Buddhist practitioner, but you seek from a non-Buddhist astrologer your long-term goals in life. I mean, Buddha gave you a goal to become enlightened. okay. Yeah, that's pretty long-term, right? okay. You know, I asked somebody one time, I said, because I've always personally, you know, and you're getting this all through my own personal filter, okay, is that I've had a great deal of difficulty because one of my teachers does a lot of divination, you know, like he throws dice to determine what to eat for lunch and who to ask to lunch and like what airplane to take. Most of my teachers aren't like that. Most of them just use divination like if somebody's sick, you know, where to go to the doctor or, you know, kind of this kind of stuff. So this one teacher who uses the dice a lot, I've had a great deal of difficulty because somehow, I said to another teacher of mine once, I said, when I go and I ask for advice, I trust my teacher's advice. I want his advice. I don't want the dice advice. Yeah, and I said, why do the lamas do the dice instead of, you know, we're trained to respect our teachers, you know, and especially when you practice Vajrayana to see your teacher like the Buddha. And I said, when you're training your mind like that, then, you know, what do you need the dice for? Because your teacher's opinion should be something that you really see. And so this other teacher that I asked, he said, yes, that's very, very true, but most people will listen more if if the teacher says it first by throwing the dice first. You know? Like if people think, oh, this came from the Buddha, it came from Pelden Lama, then they'll listen to it more than if it came from their teacher. But for me personally, it's the exact opposite. I trust my teacher's, you know, personal advice, because, you know, I mean, I really admire them more than I trust the divinations. But that's my personality, my character. Okay. Some guidance. Yeah, I wouldn't take out the dice or the stick or sit there with my mala and go like this, you know, and tell them what to do. You know, and the reason I don't do that is for a few reasons. First of all, I don't know how to with any degree of accuracy. And second of all, I think with Westerners, people need to learn to take responsibility for their lives. And for me to give them an answer that then they did would not necessarily help them, even if the answer I gave them was good advice, because the important thing is for them to come to that decision themselves and take responsibility themselves. Because the danger is, and see, here is also, you know, again, where I have some differences with the tradition, is that I feel, you know, if you throw some dice and tell somebody, you know, marry this person or do that, and then it doesn't work out, then they blame you, and then they blame the Dharma. You know, there's a likelihood that that could happen. So the kinds of questions that, you know, when people have decisions to make, or even when I have decisions to make, okay, is, first of all, I look at the ethics involved in it, you know, and I really look closely. If I do this, will I be able to keep my precepts? If I do that, will I be able to keep my precepts? Will I be able to act ethically? Are there any ethical dangers in either of these choices? It's one of the first things I look at. One of the second things I look at is which situation is going to be more conducive for my practice? Now, is there one situation where it feels like it will really encourage my practice and energize me and give me the time and, you know, the conditions to be able to practice well? Or is that thing going to really likely to inhibit or interfere with my practice? And then I also look at what is the benefit of others, the benefit to others in terms of, and this links up with the previous one. In other words, if I practice well, that benefits others. So in the long term, you know, if a situation is good for my practice, it can be beneficial for others. And then in an immediate sense, what is the short-term benefit for others? You know, is there something, you know, if I do this versus doing that, is there something that brings more direct benefit? And then I try and kind of look at these different things and balance them out. And then I think a lot when we make decisions, sometimes one thing that impedes making a wise decision is when we get real, real tight and think we have to make a very concrete decision right away now we have to make a decision now for the rest of our life how we're going to live. And, you know, usually a lot of these decisions, if we look at, you know, when we get all confused about what decision to make, very often we don't have to make a real solid decision, you know, right away. And it doesn't have to be a decision that we live out the rest of our lives. We can, you know, sometimes we can do something, and if we realize it isn't right, you know, change lanes and do something else. Yeah. So not feel like our decisions box us in. Okay. But I think what is very important in making decisions is not just doing something because it's the easy way out and it's the way that is going to create, you know, not just making a certain decision because you're afraid of what somebody else is going to say if you don't do that. Okay? In other words, letting our craving for approval and praise and support be the dominating criteria in making a decision. Then I think we often get into trouble. You know, if we make a decision and do something just to please somebody, not because we really care about that person with compassion, but simply because we want their approval and we don't want to have them not like us, then that kind of decision often we feel very restless and dissatisfied with afterwards.